All righty. We are continuing. We're almost done. We only got today and next Sunday. We're continuing our summer sermon series on Psalms 80 through 89. Today we're on Psalms 88. So we're going to highlight 1988 today. And as you just heard, one of the top songs in 1988 was Kokomo by the Beach Boys. The average cost of a new house in 1988 was $91,600. The average income per year was $24,450. And the average price of a new car was $10,400. A gallon of gas was 91 cents. And a movie ticket, the average movie ticket price across the country was $3.50. And the U.S. postage stamp stayed at 24 cents. A dozen eggs would have cost you 65 cents. And a gallon of milk was $1.89. Pork chops were only 40 cents a pound in 1988. That explains why we ate a lot of pork at my house. Lotus 123 spreadsheet. Jonathan knows what I'm talking about there. That would have cost you $299 in 1988 for that program. The Star NSX dot matrix printer. Many of you remember the old dot matrix printer. Those were $189 in 1988. And the Logitech mouse, a computer mouse, cost $89.99 back in 1988. I think you can get them at Dollar Tree now for a dollar. The IBM PC with 30 megabit hard disk with a mono monitor and 512K of memory, $1,245 back in 1988. The Sony Disc Jockey, which held 10 CD discs, was $400 in 1988. The Ford Taurus was $10,000 and a brand new Volkswagen Rabbit was $7,000 in 1988. Some of the highlights, the Olympic Winter Games were held in Calgary, Alberta, Canada in 1988. The Summer Olympics, back then, if you remember, the Summer and Winter Olympics happened the same year, every 4 years. Now it's every 2 years they do one or the other. But the Summer Olympics that year were held in Seoul, Korea, South Korea. A new drug, crack cocaine, hit the streets in 1988 and is increasingly found in the U.S. cities today. Over one-third of Yellowstone National Park was destroyed in 1988 when a series of more than 250 fires combined with the 1988 drought, and it destroyed 794,000 acres in Yellowstone. The U.S. Space Shuttle program resumed 2.5 years after the Challenger disaster happened. The first major computer virus infected computers connected to the internet in 1988. The U.S. stealth bomber was unveiled for the very first time in 1988. The Nike slogan, "Just Do It," started in 1988, and they still use that slogan today. Wrigley Field, I remember this one because it was a big controversy. In 1988, Wrigley Field had lights installed for night games for the first time in 1988. They were the last ballpark in Major League Baseball to do so. Doppler radar was invented in 1988. And table tennis, otherwise known as ping pong, became an Olympic sport in 1988. And very interesting, for the very first time in 1988, CDs outsold vinyl records for the very first time. And I just heard on the radio this week, it's kind of interesting that was in there. On the radio, they said for the first time, and so many, I can't remember how many years, probably since this, vinyl records have outsold CDs this year for the very first time. Vinyl records have come back. They're very vintage. A lot of the college and high school age kids are buying them now. But yes, for the first time, vinyl records have outsold CDs because CDs are kind of obsolete now with digital technology and stuff. So that's 1988 and for the most part. So we're going to be in the Bible in Psalms 88 today. Now, I will tell you, of all the Psalms we've read and of all the Psalms pretty much in the Bible, Psalm 88 is probably the darkest, most gloomy psalm we're going to read. And now don't sit back and say, oh, I'm just going to shut my ears off. Who wants to hear about doom, gloom, stuff like that? It is. I'm just warning you right now. It's written by an actual song leader. His name was Haman. Haman found his life in a very, very dark place. He's crying out to God. It's going to seem very, very depressing when we read it. It is. But there's a reason God put this in here. And I want us to learn a few things from this psalm. My goal is not to depress us all and think life is just terrible and life is worthless and meaningless. It's not. God used Haman for a purpose. God used Haman in the church, in the tabernacle in that day. And I want to read 88 and talk about a few things, especially this man, Haman, and where he was in life. Psalm 88, starting in verse 1 there. O Lord, the God who saves me, day and night I cry out before you. May my prayer come before you. Turn your ear to my cry, for my soul is full of trouble, and my life draws near the grave. I am counted among those who go down to the pit. I am like a man without strength. I am set apart with the dead, like the slain who lie in the grave, whom you remember no more, who are cut off from your care. You have put me in the lowest pit, in the darkest depths. Your wrath lies heavily upon me. You have overwhelmed me with all your waves. You have taken from me my closest friends and have made me repulsive to them. I am confined and cannot escape. My eyes are dim with grief. I call to you, O Lord, every day. I spread out my hands to you. Do you show your wonders to the dead? Do those who are dead rise up and praise you? Is your love declared in the grave, your faithfulness in destruction? Are your wonders known in the place of darkness, or your righteous deeds in the land of the oblivion? But I cry to you for help, O Lord. In the morning my prayer comes before you. Why, O Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? From my mouth I have been afflicted and close to death. I have suffered your terrors and am in despair. Your wrath has swept over me. Your terrors have destroyed me. All day long, they surround me like a flood. They have completely engulfed me. You have taken my companions and loved ones from me. The darkness is my closest friend. Fall time, this is a time of year when many experience seasonal depression. And it's attributed to the fact that the amount of sunlight from here to the end of the year goes down. Our days are starting to get shorter. The night is becoming longer day by day from here. And you start to see a season of depression amongst some people. And we all are certainly familiar with feelings of sadness, feelings of grief, loss. But at the deepest level, we can get to the point of despondency. That's where Haman is here. He's beyond sadness. He's beyond grief. He is to the point in his life where he is absolutely despondent. One definition of the word despondent in the dictionary is one who is in low spirits from loss of hope or courage. Low in spirits from loss of hope or courage. And that's where we find Haman here. A very despondent man. Some people are frequently despondent over things that would not make most people feel despondent. There's some people that just freak out about things, feel great loss, and we can look at those people and say, you know, that's not really a big deal that you lost that, because it's not important to us. But some things are important to other people. And sometimes people view themselves as losers or victims because of a great loss, or because something didn't go quite the way they wanted or expected it to go, and they become very despondent. But then there are experiences which are so overwhelming that they can leave most of us with a sense of hopeless misery. And some of us, if not all of us, have been there at one time or another. If you walk the earth long enough, especially as a Christian, you can go through something in life that can leave you very hopeless, very much to the point where, what's the point? And this can happen to anybody. Just as recently as this past week, I found out, as I was doing this sermon, my brother called me this week, and another teaching minister out in California. He's a teaching minister of a very large church like Saddleback, not quite as big as Saddleback, but a very, very large mega church. Had been dealing with depression his entire life. 30 years old, he killed himself this past week. Talk about despondent and despair to the point of hopelessness. So that community is grieving. That church is grieving over one that taught so many, and he spent his entire life, you know, teaching and educating about depression and bipolarism and stuff like that. And this past week, he fell victim to that. He was a good friend of my brother's. So hopelessness doesn't escape Christians either. We can all fall into that. Genesis 37, verse 35 says, expresses such a time in the life of Jacob when he thought his favorite son Joseph had been killed. Remember the story of Joseph and his brothers going out and selling him? It said, then all his sons and all his daughters arose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, surely I will go down to Sheol in mourning for my son. To have something ripped out of your hands, or have something so great ripped out of your life that you've loved and it's gone forever. Some people get stuck beyond just normal mourning. Either the loss of a loved one, a loss of a job, a loss of an asset, whatever the case may be. Get stuck in their despondency. Having a lack of hope. Feeling hopeless for a long, long, long time. Psalm 88 that we just read is a lament. And this psalmist is completely and utterly overwhelmed with despondency. You can tell that just by the first reading of it. This psalm begins and ends with a very despondent psalmist. Like I told you, his name is Haman. He lived in David's day and was the grandson of Samuel the prophet. You've probably all read about Samuel the prophet in the Old Testament. This was his grandson. He was called the singer and was one of the three chief musicians during David's reign. So this isn't just any old guy. This is a leader in the church. He was a leader of worship in the church at that time. And I wonder if he, just from reading his description of his ailments, it makes me wonder if he had a leprosy-like disease that meant he had to leave home and live outside the town, probably in the wilderness with another leper colony. Just a thought, just an opinion, not fact. But like I said, there is no sadder prayer in the Psalms. In all the Psalms that you read, you will not find a sadder prayer. In this psalm, God gives us permission to be fully human. I find that very interesting. Don't forget, we serve a God that knows human feelings. And he experienced those feelings through his son, Jesus Christ. And he absolutely gives us permission here in Psalms 88 to be fully human, to face the realities of misery rather than just to deny them. And to pour our complaints, our despondency, and miseries before God in prayer. This is a guy who has obviously lost a lot in life. And he's come to the throne of God and pours his spirit out to God. So I want to go verse by verse, not verse, but we'll take chunk by chunk. If you're following along the outline, yes, Mike, there's 5 points. Because the battery's almost dead. I'll try to stay behind here, Jonathan. First and foremost, Haman still trusts in God. In the first two verses we see there, we know and we absolutely see that Haman still trusts in God. O Lord, the God who saves me, day and night I cry out before you. He still acknowledges God as God. He still trusts in the one true God. So who is Haman? I gave you a brief description. According to the Jewish Encyclopedia, he is the grandson of the prophet Samuel. His surname was the Singer. He was a Kohathite. He was one of the three chief Levites appointed by David to superintend the musical service in the temple. He had 14 sons. That might have caused some of his despondency as well. All of whom assisted in the choir under their father, and each of whom was the head of one of the 24 courses of the Levites established by David. Like I said, this wasn't just an ordinary man. He was a leader, a high leader in the church. Haman was also called the king's seer in the matters of God. So he was a man of righteousness. But here we find Haman in a very dark place of despondency. So what happened to him? Like I said, my theory, and it's only a theory, hear that loud. It's only a theory, not fact. But just in reading this, I kind of picture Haman being diagnosed with a skin disease, probably leprosy, if that. That meant that he had to dwell outside the city limits, not get close to anyone without yelling unclean at him. Just by his description and just by what he talks about there, that's what it sounds like to me. It very well could be something different, but that's my theory. But what we learn in first couple verses there is being miserable does not indicate a lack of faith. Hear that. Just because you're miserable in life or you see somebody in the church in misery doesn't necessarily mean or indicate that there's a lack of faith there. It just means somebody's being human. Somebody's hurting. Somebody is despondent and feeling hopeless. And let me tell you, you can either make the scriptures oppose one another or you can integrate them into a whole. Like a little here and a little there. And I mean that by some Christians only see the rejoice verses, the happy verses. They only like to read the joyful Psalms and the joyful parts in the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But faith is not only about fending off misery through the wise and the right choices, but rather finding the strength to face them. So how are we going to learn how to face misery, how to face despondency, without seeing how God's people dealt with it or how God dealt with those people in a time of great misery? So as you read scripture, you got to read it. You got to sprinkle in a little rejoicing there and joy there, but also you got to get through some of the dark pages of the Bible as well to help us grow as a Christian. The psalmist describes God as the God who saves me. The God who saves me. Not just other people. Haman's not forgetting that God has saved people for generations, including his own people, the Israelites, many times. Haman recognizes God as the God who saves me. The God who is capable of loving me. The God who will not cry out unclean to me. Haman recognizes God as the one true God. And he hasn't forgotten in all of his misery, in all of his depression, his despondency, whatever. He remembers that God is God. He is the God who never changes. And he continues to put his trust in him. This psalmist, Haman, prays because he believes. You're going to go through times in life that are very miserable. It's part of living here on planet Earth. Some of you have experienced that years, if not decades ago. Some of you have experienced it in the last year. But you choose to believe. You get out of bed every morning and believe that God is who he says he is. And God's going to do what he says he's going to do. And just as scripture says, at just the right time, God moves. At just the right time, God saves. Not according to our time. Sometimes the only light you have is that God exists and you can talk to him in prayer. And sometimes that's the only light you need to get you through something. Is to know that God exists. To know that he loves you. And to know that he listens. There is no other light that can help. So Haman's still trusting God through this whole thing. Then we get through verses 3 through 5. And that's where it gets real dark, because we see that Haman hates his life. Haman absolutely hates the life that he's been given to this point. He hates who he has become. He hates his situation. In verse 3, he is overwhelmed with trouble. For my soul is full of trouble, and my life draws near the grave. Not fun. He's not in a stage of joyful singing right now. He hates what has become of him. He is overwhelmed with grief. Verses 4 through 5, he describes himself to the point where he feels literally like a zombie, where he's just existing. He's not alive at all. And you know what? It's okay to tell God that. It's okay to tell God as a Christian, you don't feel like you're full of life. That happens. Satan loves to rob us of our joy. He loves to use life situations to rob us of joy, which will rob God of any glory. It happens. Haman is being very honest with God. He trusts in God. He believes that God is who he says he is, but he's being very honest with God. I hate what this has become. I hurt physically. I hurt mentally. I hurt spiritually. And there is no other light to go to but you, Almighty One. And if you know what a zombie is, there's plenty of zombie movies and TV shows out there right now. They are the living dead. That's the best way that Haman can describe himself right here. I'm living. I have a heart that beats. I have lungs that breathe. But I am dead inside. I'm dead spiritually. I'm dead mentally. Dead almost physically. Haman hates his life to this point. And then in verses 6 through 12, Haman feels like God has put him in hell on earth. We hear that phrase a lot. Oh, I'm living on hell on earth. None of us, no matter what life situation we're in, are even close to living in hell. Hell is absolute separation from God the Father. Absolute separation from God the Father. The only living human being that has endured that is Jesus Christ on the cross, when God the Father had to forsake him because he carried your sin and my sin on his back. But Haman feels like he's experiencing hell. And we can have all have probably said we've experienced that, whether we were a teenager at the time, or we've gone through great loss, or we've gone through great suffering, and it just feels like, man, why am I going through this hell? Don't forget, Haman was a minister of music. But in his current state, how could he lead the congregation in song? You ever been to that point where you're just in a place mentally, spiritually, that how can I do ministry? I'm stuck. How can I get up and lead men, lead women to the cross of Jesus? How can I bring other people joy when my joy has been robbed of me? How can I lead other people to the cross where I don't understand what Jesus is doing in my life right now? Verse 6, Haman says he's been consigned to the lowest pit. Verse 7, he says he's under God's wrath. Now, whether he is or not, this is his thought and this is his feelings. Verse 8, he says he's been abandoned by his friends. Verses 8 and 9, he says he feels trapped. You ever been there? You ever felt like you were trapped between two hard places and you can't get out? Verse 9, though, says he's persistent in prayer. But he says his prayers go unanswered. That one we can all identify with. I'm sure we've all been somewhere in life where we just feel that God's not listening. Because God's not moving the way I think he should be moving, and God's not moving when I think he should be moving. And we completely abandon the words of Jesus when he says, oh, God moves, but God moves on his time, and God moves at the right time, and God moves when it's best, not just for him, but when it's best for you. And God will move when it's going to glorify him, not when it's going to glorify you. But Haman is at that place. And in verses 10 through 12, he's at the place and he's basically saying, how can he exalt God in heaven when he feels trapped in hell? How can I exalt the God of heaven when I feel like I've been cast out and I feel like I've been abandoned by God? He's just being very honest with God in this song. So he hates his life. He feels like he's been put in hell on earth. And then 13 through 18, Haman persists in faith despite his distorted perspective. This is huge. If you hear nothing, hear points 4 and 5 today. We're not at 5 yet. Haman persists in faith despite his distorted perspective. I use that word distorted because I believe his perspective is not truly true completely. I don't believe God has abandoned him. I don't believe it was God who threw him in the pit. But let me tell you, when your mind is determined to be depressed, it selectively chooses to focus only on the negative part of the picture. I know that because I've been there. When your mind has given up that it's going to be depressed about whatever, sometimes that's mental illness and your mind needs medication. Sometimes it's a hormonal imbalance, a chemical imbalance. Sometimes that depression happens. It happens physically. But it can even happen when there's not an imbalance there. And that's when your mind just decides it's going to be depressed. And you just start to focus only on the negative parts of whatever. If you don't like your life at home and you are depressed about your home situation, you are only going to look at the negative parts of home. You're going to look at every negative part of your spouse. You're going to look at every negative part of your children. You're going to only see the negative parts of your home. What's wrong with every little asset that you have? You're going to be focused on those things. If your depression is at work, you're going to only look at the negative things at work. How negative your boss is, how negative your job is, how negative your income is, no, whatever. If you're depressed about church, you're only going to see the negative aspects of church. And let me tell you, there are a lot of negative aspects of church because churches are full of imperfect people. And if you choose not to see the positive things in what God is doing in the life of people, it's going to be very easy to be depressed at home, at work, at church, in the community, wherever the case may be. But Haman, his prayer and his writing of the psalm testify to persistent faith. You see that in verses 13 and 14. But I cry to you for help, O Lord. So after he's described, I hate my life. I feel like you've put me on hell on earth here, God. But I cry to you for help, O Lord. In the morning, my prayer comes before you. Why, O Lord, do you reject me and hide your face from me? He's not saying that God's ignoring him, but he is saying, why are you turning from me? Then in verses 15 through 17, he looks back at his memories and his memories are only negative. That's very easy to do when you're in a despondent stage or a depressed stage, to look back at your life and only see the negative parts of your life. I remember when I was in my early 20s, and I would describe my family life growing up. You would have thought I was in the most abusive home on planet Earth. I had the meanest mom in town. My dad was a terrible dad. Now looking back as a man in his 40s, I was raised in a beautiful Christian home who actually disciplined their children. Depends on your perspective. When you only want to see negative, you're going to find negative. When you ask God to show you what he's doing and how he's done it, he will show you those things. But Haman's stuck. And he looks back at his memories. And in verses 15 through 17, they're only negative memories if you pay attention. And in verse 18, he tells God, he feels so lonely. And you know what kind of loneliness that is. You can be in a room full of people right now and still feel lonely. You do not have to be sitting at home by yourself and feel lonely. Especially if you feel like your Creator and the one true God has abandoned you. But it's interesting, even through all that, Haman persists in his faith that God is the one true God, or else he wouldn't be having this conversation with God. So number five, what can we learn from this drab, depressing, horribly dark psalm? Two words: get real. God is calling you to get real. What I mean by that is living life as a human is hard. Living life as an adult human is hard. Suffering and misery are part of God's plan for us. Now, that's not how he created it. God did not create to have misery. But if you remember back in Genesis, when God gave the curse because of sin, he looked at man and said, oh, you are going to have misery. You are going to have to work hard. The ground is not just going to easily produce for you what you want it to produce. The earth is no longer going to be this wonderful, lovely place without problems. He looked at woman and said, oh, you're going to have misery. Trust me, you're going to want to have children, but you're going to go through misery to have them. You are going to have pain and suffering in having them. And let me tell you, in raising those children, you're going to have misery and suffering. It's all part of being human. Jesus even says, he talks to his Christian followers, in this world, you are going to have trouble. That is a promise from God himself, something to be expected. So what can we learn from this? Expect misery. Expect trouble, especially if you are a follower of Jesus Christ. Now, Jesus ends that sentence, though, with, but take hold, I've overcome the world. Which means, yeah, you are going to have misery. You are going to have trouble. You may at times feel abandoned and lonely, but you hold on to that one truth. I have overcome. And if I have overcome, I will take care of you. And I will get you through what I need you to get through to glorify God in heaven. We do not know what is around the corner. But let me tell you, we know a God who does. And we can't live a life of fear. And there are people that choose not to serve God because of the unknown. They choose to not serve God because they don't know if they're going to be good enough. They don't know if people are going to listen. They don't know where their place in heaven is going to be if they mess up. I had a guy in my last church, not here, in my last church. For 5 years, I tried, and I'm still good friends with this man today. For 5 years, I tried to get him to be a Sunday school teacher. And he refused and refused. He would have been a wonderful Sunday school teacher, an adult Sunday school teacher. He didn't want to do it because he read in Scripture of how God judges those who teach on a much higher level. Which all that meant is God expects a lot from those people. He wouldn't teach because he was afraid that he might fail in the eyes of God. 15 years later, he still does not teach Sunday school. And I know he's gifted at it. We can't be thinking about what's around the corner and thinking we know what's going to happen. Oh, I know I'm going to fail. No, you don't. Only God knows what's around that corner. We can be despondent without becoming bitter against God. That's another thing we can learn from this text. I have felt depression. I have felt despondency before. I myself have never felt bitterness against God. But let me tell you, I have had brothers and sisters in the church who have experienced that. I don't identify with it. I don't understand it. But it happens. When life situations happen, people get very, very bitter with God. Why did you allow this to happen to me? Why did you not answer my prayer to come save the day? Why did you not save my finances? Why did you not save my marriage? Why did you not save my child from death? Whatever the case may be. And they get very bitter with God. Haman's very bitter with God right here. Why have you allowed all this stuff to happen to me? Why have you forsaken me? Let me tell you, you can be despondent and not be bitter with God. You can choose to be scared. You can choose to be hurt. You can even choose to be depressed and look at negative and still look to the one true God as your Savior and as your only source of hope. Because He's promised it. He promised a big, huge promise. I will never leave you, and I will never forsake you. Even in the midst of misery, God promises, and even when it seems like He's not moving, God says, I will not leave you, and I will not let you go on through things by yourself. We need to be realistic about what to expect in life as a Christian. And I believe we as Americans have had it very, very cushy and very easy when you look at the rest of the world when it comes to being a Christian. But yet we still get bitter with God sometimes. There are men and women today, this morning, who are fearing for their lives because they are worshiping Jesus Christ. And we think we're suffering? There are men and women who died yesterday because of their faith in Jesus Christ. And we think we're suffering. We need to be realistic. We need to get real about what to expect in the Christian life. The Christian life, folks, is a battleground. It is not a playground. And people think that's what it's going to be when they give their life to Jesus. The Christian life is definitely a battleground. You are at battle with the forces of evil. It is not a playground where you're just going to have good feelings all the time and life is going to go well and you're going to be given great wealth and health. That is a lie preached by preachers given to by Satan. The whole doctrine of wealth and health. Jesus says, nah, that's not what you're going to get. You're going to get trouble. You're going to be accused of things. You are going to be outcast because of my name. If it happened to him, it's going to happen to us. But being a listening ear and being a friend helps. We have been given the gift of the church. And if you're at the point right now where you're feeling despondent, hopeless, remove all pride. Go to a Christian brother. Go to a Christian sister who's going to sit there and listen to you, who's going to pray with you, who's going to be a friend to you and to not judge you, but to be the one that's going to bring the Holy Spirit alongside and say, we're going to get you through this. And God's going to be glorified on the other end. You can also learn that remaining steadfast in prayer is crucial. To get you through any kind of hopeless feeling, you've got to stay steadfast in your prayer life. That's why you need to make it a habit today. To be in constant prayer today, because when those times come, then you're really going to need that consistent prayer. And if you're already used to going to the throne of God each and every day when life is going good, let me tell you, you're going to need it even more when life isn't going so good. And maybe you are being persecuted, or maybe you are going through a life circumstance that just hurts. And you don't know how you're going to get up tomorrow morning and be who God's called you to be. Some problems have no solutions in this life. And I like Ecclesiastes 3:4. This is the last one I'm going to give you. Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 4 basically tells us and reminds us, enjoy the good times when you can. Man, enjoy the good times when you can. It says there's a time to weep, a time to laugh, a time to mourn, and a time to dance. In the times where you get to dance, man, dance. Dance before your Heavenly Father and feel good and rejoice in those times. Because there's going to be times are coming where it's not going to be fun. But hang on to the good times and don't forget the good times. Don't forget when it was fun serving Jesus. Don't forget when it was fun watching people come to Jesus Christ because of the words you spoke or because of the friendship you offered that they were introduced to Jesus for the first time. Don't forget those times. Joelle and I went through a time, real quick, I know I'm going long. Joelle and I went through a time in teenage rearing where it wasn't fun being the father of a teenage girl. And I told her, I said, this isn't fun anymore. I don't want to be a dad anymore. This wasn't in the handbook. Mary reminded me, remember the little girl who screamed and yelled when she had to get out of your lap. Remember the little girl who thought you were the best superhero on planet Earth. Remember those good times. They will come again. Greg Coles reassured me of that. He's been through it. Some other of you guys who have raised daughters have said, yep, you'll get through it. And we are. Joelle and I are a lot better than we were 5 years ago. Not where I want to be completely yet, but it's getting better. I'm still not superhero anymore. But she loves my checkbook. But don't forget the good times, especially in ministry and especially in your walk with God, because they do help you get through the time of despondency. Folks, I just want to leave you with this. God is reminding us here that life on earth is not what he intended it to be. Sin entered the world, and sin changed everything. But he has given us hope in Jesus Christ that promises a life eternal. A life without fear, a life without hurt, a life without suffering, a life without pain. But you have to believe. Haman believed. He believed in the one true God, despite his despondency. No matter what you are going through in life right now, I want you to hear that you have a God who is on your side, and he promises in Psalm 30, verse 5, weeping may stay for the night, but rejoicing comes in the morning. Highlight that promise. Psalm 30, verse 5, weeping may last through the night, but rejoicing comes in the morning. He will make all things new again. That is a promise. Hang on to your faith and continue to trust that he still knows what he's doing in your life. He still has a plan for your life, and he still has a direction he wants you to go. If you are still above ground right now, God has a plan for you. He still has a place for you in the kingdom. Let's not ever forget that. I want to offer you this time. If you've never before given your life to Jesus Christ, man, today's your day. Today's your day. Come up, throw your hands in the air, say, God, I need you more than anything on planet Earth. I need your love and I need your grace, and I want to start my life anew with you today. Come. We invite you to do that. For the rest of us, I don't know where you are in your Christian walk. Some of you I do know. We're all in different places with our walk. We all get scared about stuff. We all get worried about stuff. We all get depressed about stuff. We all get hurt about stuff. Don't ever forget you have a God that loves you and a God that is on your side. Raise your spiritual hands to him today and put your trust in him today. We're going to sing we're going to do something a little different today. Susie and Greg had to leave early this morning to help a family member. I'm going to lead the invitation song this morning. So thank goodness God knew what he was doing. He turned my mic off. I'm going to step down, and let's all stand. We're going to sing our invitation together.